You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller, featuring SmittenKitchen.com. Today we're going to start off with a recipe for 5 egg sandwiches. Why egg sandwiches? I often feel on the weekends, especially, that I have to choose between going out and having a full day or having a really grand breakfast. And while deli-style egg sandwiches to go are everywhere in the city, they're not exactly inspiring. Having a few packable ideas up our sleeves allowed us to be able to get our day started whenever we wanted, or were expected to by our in-house tyrant, skip both brunch lines and stale coffee shop scones, and still eat something grand when we got hungry for a real breakfast. I'm sorry, I really have to link this to this at least once a year or until there's a better exhibit of how terrible colds feel. I'm sick while I'm writing this recipe this week. So here we have the 5 egg sandwiches, which is really called 3 pepper shakshuka pita with feta and za'atar. Shakshuka, which is a North African and Mediterranean dish of eggs cooked in a spicy tomato sauce, is my favorite way to intersect tomatoes and eggs. But it's not portable. This, with added sweet peppers, a sprinkling of feta and za'atar, all loaded into a handheld pita, is, and it's wonderful, though keep some napkins nearby. If you can't or don't wish to purchase za'atar, there are many recipes to make your own on the web. My lazier approach is to use equal parts of dried oregano, marjoram, ground sumac, ground cumin, and toasted sesame seeds, along with sea salt, about half of one part. It's delicious on everything from shakshuka to hummus to toasted pita wedges with a drizzle of olive oil. You can squeeze a single egg and a bit of sauce in a pita, but it's tight. A larger pita will hold one egg and a nice ladleful of sauce, or 2 eggs and a lesser amount of sauce. So this recipe serves 2 to 4. You'll need 2 to 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1/2 of a small onion chopped, 2 cloves of garlic crushed and then minced, 1 red bell pepper cored and sliced into thin strips, 1 yellow bell pepper cored and sliced into thin strips, 1 Anaheim or 1 jalapeno chili cored and sliced into thin strips, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, 1 teaspoon of paprika, 1/4 teaspoon of table salt, 1 14-ounce can of crushed tomatoes, fire roasted if you can get them, 6 eggs, 1/2 of feta cheese crumbled, 2 teaspoons or more to taste of za'atar, and 1 to 2 tablespoons of chopped flat leaf parsley, this is optional, to garnish, and 6 small or 4 large pitas. Heat the oil in a large skillet over medium-high heat, and once hot, add the onion and cook until it softens a bit, about 4 to 5 minutes. Add garlic and cook for 1 minute more. Add peppers, all varieties, and sauté them until they soften a bit, about 5 minutes. Add salt, paprika, and cumin and cook for 1 minute more. Pour in tomatoes and then 1/2 can, you can eyeball this, of water and bring the mixture to a simmer. Reduce the heat to medium-low and simmer the sauce for 15 minutes, stirring occasionally and adjust seasonings to taste. While the sauce simmers, gently warm your pitas. Make 6 indentations in the sauce and crack an egg into each. Put a lid on the pot and cook the eggs until your desired firmness. After 3 to 4 minutes, they should have set whites and mostly loose yolks. After 5 to 6, they'll be fully set in the middle. Sprinkle the surface of the dish with za'atar, feta, and parsley if you're using, holding a little feta and parsley back if you want additional garnish. Cut open each pita and scoop 1 or 2 if you're using large enough to fit, egg, and surrounding sauce into each pita. Garnish with reserved feta and parsley if desired and eat immediately. As far as doing ahead, the sauce can be made in advance and stored in an airtight container until needed. Bring back to a low simmer before adding the eggs. got another bonus recipe here for egg tartines with asparagus, pesto, Dijon, and pickled shallots. You'll have extra of both shallots and likely the pesto, but I don't think you'll mind. The former can be used for other sandwiches or salads. They also make excellent taco toppers and slaw additions. And the latter can be spread on additional toasts. I'm tremendously fond of whole grain Dijon mustard for this sandwich because the whole seeds provide a spectacular taste and texture without being spicy. If using a smooth Dijon, which I find sharper, use a little less. I prefer the mustard here as an accent, a brightener, not a central flavor. This makes 6 tartines. For the pickled shallots, you'll need 1/4 cup of red or white wine vinegar, 2 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1.5 teaspoons of sugar, 1/4 cup of water, 3 small shallots peeled and thinly sliced. For the asparagus pesto, you'll need 1/2 pound of asparagus spears trimmed of the rough ends, 1 garlic clove peeled and chopped, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 3 tablespoons of pine nuts or almonds toasted and cooled and then divided, 1/4 teaspoon of table salt or a little more of a coarse sea salt, and 2 tablespoons of olive oil. To assemble, you're going to need 6 large slices of whole wheat sourdough bread, miche, or another sliced country bread of your choice, toasted, 2 tablespoons of whole grain Dijon mustard, 6 large hard-boiled eggs. As far as pickling the shallots, you're going to whisk the vinegar, salt, and sugar together in a small, non-reactive, which glass is my first choice, dish until they're dissolved. You're going to whisk in the water and drop in the shallots. Cover the dish and chill in the fridge for at least 30 minutes, preferably an hour, and even better if you can let them pickle for a day. Then you're going to cook the asparagus. Bring a wide pot of salted water to a boil, then drop in asparagus spears. Cook for 3 to 4 minutes until tender but firm. Plunge in ice water or rinse with very cold water to cool and stop the cooking, and then pat dry on a towel. As far as making the pesto, you're going to transfer the spears, breaking it in half so that they'll fit, to a food processor along with the chopped garlic, Parmesan, and 2 tablespoons of the pine nuts or almonds, and pulse the machine in short bursts until ingredients are finely chopped but not pureed. Drizzle in olive oil while continuing to pulse until just combined. You can run it until the mixture is fully smooth, but I prefer to leave it coarse. Then you're going to assemble the tartines. Spread each toast with a thin layer of Dijon, about 1 teaspoon per slice. Spread the asparagus pesto thickly over the Dijon, about 2 tablespoons per slice, or more to taste. Slice the hard-boiled eggs thinly, crosswise, and arrange slices decoratively over the pesto. Scattered pickled shallot rings over the eggs and garnish with sea salt, freshly ground pepper, and reserved tablespoon of pine nuts or almonds if desired. Here's another egg sandwich recipe. I guess we've got the 5 egg sandwiches was actually, there are 5 egg sandwich recipes. So here we go. Runny egg BLT sandwich. Does a BLT leave anything to be desired? Wasn't it perfect just the way it was invented? Isn't a runny egg a total mess in the middle of a sandwich? Could anything be more outdated than white bread and iceberg lettuce? I suspect if you're asking yourself these questions, this sandwich is not for you, but everyone else is probably halfway to the kitchen, about to make seconds. This makes 1 sandwich. You'll need 2 to 3 slices of bacon, halved to approximate the sandwich lengths, 2 thin slices of white sourdough or country bread, toasted, 4 thin slices of tomato, a few leaves of iceberg lettuce, 1 tablespoon mayonnaise, 1 large egg, 1 teaspoon butter, salt, and freshly ground black pepper to taste. Cook your bacon in a frying pan or on a griddle until crisp, and then drain on paper towels and set aside. Meanwhile, put your bread in to toast, and once toasted, spread each slice with mayonnaise and then stack 1 side with tomatoes, lettuce, and bacon. Finally, cook your egg. Heat a small skillet, or heck, your bacon skillet, in which case skip the butter and use some of the bacon grease, to medium-high and melt the butter. Once fully melted, swirl it around, crack the egg into the center, and cover the pan with a small lid. Cook for 1 to 2 minutes until the whites are solid and hopefully a little butter-fried and crunchy at the lacy edges. You can stop here, but I do find for sandwiches that it makes slightly less of a mess to then flip the egg and cook it for another 30 seconds until it's still runny but unlikely to run fully off of your sandwich. Season the egg with salt and pepper and transfer to the bacon, tomato, and lettuce stack, and then top with a second slice of mayo-slathered toast. Cut in half and eat immediately. Next recipe, ooh, this looks good. Egg, potato, and chorizo tacos with queso fresco. This is for people who feel that breakfast cannot be hearty enough. If a cup of yogurt or a piece of whole grain toast and jam could fall on a breakfast spectrum, this would be on the opposite end. A Tex-Mex riff on a roadside diner breakfast special of fried eggs, hash browns, breakfast links, and pancakes. With that, you've been warned. Make ahead of time and frozen until needed. This is a fantastic weekend breakfast when you've got better things to do than stand over a stove. This makes 8 small breakfast tacos, and hungry people might want 2 of these. You'll need 1 pound of Yukon Gold potatoes, cut into small, about 1/2 inch cubes, 1 tablespoon of olive or vegetable oil, 1/2 of a small onion, finely chopped, 1/2 of a pound of Mexican chorizo, the casings removed, salt, freshly ground black pepper, 6 large eggs, 8 small corn tortillas, warmed or blistered in a hot pan. To finish, you'll need crumbled queso fresco. That's cotija, ricotta, salata, and feta are decent substitutes if you can't find it. You'll need some chopped cilantro, diced tomatoes, diced white onions. You can also sink these in the same pickle brine as the shallots in the earlier recipe. Pickled jalapenos, a dollop of crema or sour cream, a squeeze of lime juice, a dash of hot sauce, or all of the above. In a large saucepan, you're going to cover the potatoes with 1 inch of cold water and bring it to a boil. Cook for 5 minutes until somewhat tender and then drain the potatoes. Meanwhile, heat a 12-inch cast iron frying pan over medium heat and then heat the oil in it. Cook your onion until it is soft and translucent, about 3 to 4 minutes. Then add the chorizo, breaking it up with your spoon as you brown it, and saute until cooked through and browned, about 5 minutes. Add drained potatoes and cook until they are fully tender and a bit browned at the edges, and season the mixture with salt and freshly ground black pepper. In a medium bowl, beat the eggs and pour the mixture over the potato chorizo in the pan. Cook until the egg mixture is scrambled and virtually cooked through. It will finish cooking in the residual heat. And then you're going to divide the mixture among the tortillas. Scatter with queso fresco, cilantro, and the toppings of your choice, and eat immediately. As far as doing ahead, extra tacos can be wrapped in foil and frozen until needed, warm in the oven. Here's a recipe for cheddar cornbread waffle sandwich with creamed eggs, creamed greens, and a poached egg. So here I tried to mash up some of my favorite breakfast things: cheddar cornbread, waffles, lightly creamed greens, and poached eggs in a single teetering sandwich. I realized that as far as sandwiches go, this one is a stretch. It's precarious at best. You'll probably want a fork and knife around just to be safe, or you could challenge the waffle's indentations to catch all dribbles. Want to add yet another layer of delicious? Crisp up a slice of ham or Canadian bacon and add it to the stack under the greens. This makes 4 towering waffle sandwiches. For the waffles, you'll need 3/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 3/4 cup of cornmeal, 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 teaspoon of granulated sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of table salt, 1 cup of buttermilk, 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter melted and cooled slightly, 1 large egg, 1 half cup of finely grated cheddar cheese, and spray cooking oil to coat the waffle iron. For the creamed greens, you'll need 5 ounces of baby spinach or another fairly quick cooking green of your choice, stemmed if the stems are heavy. You'll need some butter and 1/4 of a small onion finely chopped and 3 tablespoons of heavy cream. To assemble, you're going to need 4 large eggs, hot sauce, and diced fresh tomatoes. This is optional. Preheat your oven to warm and place a tray on the middle rack. To make the waffles, you're going to whisk the flour, cornmeal, baking powder, sugar, and salt in a medium bowl. In a smaller bowl, whisk together the buttermilk, butter, and egg, and stir the wet ingredients and grated cheese into the dry mixture until combined. To make the waffles according to your, go ahead and make the waffles according to your manufacturer's directions. In the waffle iron, I used a thin one that made 6 rectangular waffles per batch. I cooked the waffles on the middle heat setting and needed 1 1/4 to 1 1/2 cups of batter per batch. So I made about 1 1/2 batches, yielding 9 small waffles. Transfer the waffles to a tray in a warmed oven and leave them there while you cook your greens. Prepare the cream greens. You're going to wash your greens, but there's no need to dry them. In a large skillet over medium-high heat, cook the greens until wilted. And for baby spinach, we prefer it just barely wilted, which just takes a minute. For heartier greens, you want to cook them a few minutes longer. And then transfer the greens to a colander and press out as much extra liquid as you can. If desired, coarsely chop the greens. Wipe out the pan and return it to medium heat. Melt the butter and then cook the onion until soft and tender, about 5 minutes. Return the greens to the pan and drizzle heavy cream over them. Cook, stirring until the cream simmers for a minute and the mixture is evenly combined, and then season with salt and freshly ground black pepper and set aside. Next, you're going to poach the eggs according to your favorite method. If you don't have one, here's mine. I heat a saucepan with a couple of inches in water to the point right before it simmers. I'm using a cooking spoon, create a whirlpool to crack your egg right into the center of and have it stop swirling. The egg should mostly wrap around itself. Continue to let the egg cook, keeping the water from fully simmering until the white is firmed up, but the egg still jiggles from the middle when nudged with a spoon. It'll be about 3 to 4 minutes. Scoop out with a slotted spoon and repeat with the remaining eggs. As far as assembling the sandwiches, you're going to place 1 square or wedge of waffle on a plate, top with 1/4 of the creamed greens and a single poached egg, dash with hot sauce if desired, or a scattering of chopped tomatoes. Top with a second square or wedge of waffle and eat precariously. There's your 5 egg recipes, 5 egg sandwiches. Next, we're going to have a recipe for a lentil and chickpea salad with feta and tahini. This sounds really scrumptious. I have an uneven history with chef cookbooks. I've learned the hard way more than often that I've wished to, that just because I might enjoy sitting down at someone's restaurant table does not mean that their work will translate into an enjoyable home cooking experience. You know, one without sous chefs and dishwashers, plural, at one's disposal, and a customer base footing the bill for the Himalayan pink sea salt. The best of these books make for wonderful reading and bring the fresh air of new flavors and tricks into your home cooking routine. But the worst, well, yikes, you're not getting those hours back. So despite the fact that I gushed about the Breslin nearly a year ago, and also in an interview for Amazon, even though I've fussed over the Spotted Pig, I didn't even consider picking up Chef April Bloomfield's book, A Girl and Her Pig, because the odds felt slim that it would provide me with anything close to the joy that her cooking does at a dark table at the Ace Hotel, with a grapefruit gin and tonic swoon in my hand. And then her book swept mine in the final round of a cookbook competition, And I knew from reading the gushing praise bestowed on it by an entire series of independent reviewers that I was the one missing out. When I bought the book last week, I immediately ran off to the back room to hide with it for a little while and proceeded to fall deeply, immensely in love. Bloomfield might be known for her nose-to-tail cookery, but time and again, it's her way with vegetables and one-off dishes that blow me away. From the earliest pages, she taunts you with squash and pancetta toasts, toast with ramp butter and fried quail eggs, a stack of lacy-thin crepe pancakes with bacons and chilies, and a spring vegetable soup with everything from Jerusalem artichokes to white beans and vinegary deviled eggs. It doesn't hurt that her go-to favorite ingredients seem to overlap with mine. Lemon, feta, garlic, cumin, sesame, and flaky sea salt. But it makes even more fun that she had me within a day reaching outside of my comfort zone, trying to track down rice grain-sized dried pequin chilies, P-E-Q-U-I-N, in New York, pulling the green germs out of the center of garlic cloves, and pulling down my dusty, most ignored coffee grinder so that I could find out why she gushed so much about the flavor of freshly toasted and ground spices. I realize at the outset of the prospect of a lentil and chickpea salad doesn't sound very intriguing. It sounds like the kind of thing you'd eat because you ought to, and ought to's rarely make for delicious eating. But she uses a series of techniques to make these humble ingredients one of the most intense and complexly flavored salad experiences that I've ever made at home. Thank goodness. Making the salad might seem pesky. You toast whole spices and grind them. The onions have one treatment and the lentils another, the dressing a third, and I seriously read the plating instructions 4 times. Well, given I had a yelling 3-year-old nearby, hey, that's real life though, isn't it? And I still couldn't make sense of why it had to be so complicated. And while this is usually the point where I say, I simplified it for you, you'll make it in less time than I did. Well, we hadn't even finished our first bite before I realized I didn't want to. I'll suggest places here and there where corners can be cut without taking away from the recipe's central awesomeness. But I also think that if you can find a little extra time to putter in the kitchen, you'll find brilliance in the way that she wrote it. And that really is the fun of trying new recipes, right? So, I have a favor to ask. On the cover of her book, April Bloomfield stands with a dead pig slung across her shoulders. And I realize that this isn't for everyone. Not everyone eats meat, and those who do not eat may not eat pork products, and even those who do may not want to see their food staring back at them. But whenever I've read a review of or discussion about her book, inevitably a slew of comments will say, ooh, and it shouldn't. I just tune it out and move on with this life. It just drives me batty. But please keep in mind that Bloomfield hails from the nose-to-tail cooking school. She works with animals that were as humanely raised as possible and uses every part. She gives the animals she cooks the most respect that a chef can, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with feeling that it's still not for you. Nobody is saying that you must find great joy in looking at dead animals, or that you don't have to look at all, but yelling, icky, at someone who eats or cooks something that you don't like is never going to be the way to begin a grown-up conversation about things that matter. Trust me, I have a 3-year-old. I know about these things. So here's the recipe for lentil and chickpea salad with feta and tahini. Tweak just a bit from April Bloomberg's A Girl and Her Pig. So, I promised to list places where I felt the recipe could be streamlined. For example, I don't think that a tremendous amount will be lost if you don't cook your lentils with garlic, cloves, and sage. Though they tasted and smelled amazing when I did, you could use spices already ground. I'd use 1/3 to 1/2 of each if so. But my heavens, they were bursting with flavor when I started whole. And you could probably press your garlic clove rather than mashing it into a paste with salt and a mortar or on a cutting board. I simplified the assembly process a little and actually skipped the preserved lemon because neither my husband nor I are very into them. And hey, we're the ones eating the dish. And I used sheep's milk feta instead of goat because that's what I usually have around. Bulgarian and French are my favorite types, if you can find either. and I use parsley instead of cilantro. But I can also promise this. Should you feel like spending a little bit of extra time in the kitchen this week, there's so much to absorb here. From the amazing background sage, garlic, and olive oil infused tiny green lentils with, from the roasty depth of pan-toasted finely ground spices, and the sweet nuttiness of sesame seeds, toasted two shades darker, to almost pickling red onion slices with lemon juice, this salad made as written was more layered and complex than I ever imagined a legume salad being, and it made my week. So for the lentils, you'll need a scant 1 cup dried green lentils, a PUY or Castelluccio if you can find them, the lentils picked and rinsed over, 2 large garlic cloves halved lengthwise, 2 fresh sage sprigs, 2 tablespoons of olive oil. For the dressing and salad, you'll need 2 teaspoons of coriander seeds toasted and ground, 1 teaspoon of cumin seeds toasted and ground, 1/2 large garlic clove, salt, Maldon or another flaky sea salt if you have it, 2 tablespoons of well-stirred tahini paste, 1/4 cup of freshly squeezed lemon juice plus more to taste, 2 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons of olive oil, 1 3/4 cups drained chickpeas from my 15-ounce can, low sodium if you can find them, 1/2 of a small preserved lemon, pith and flesh discarded, rind finely diced. This is optional. 1 small, very small red onion, thinly sliced into half moons. 1 handful of small, delicate cilantro or flat leaf parsley sprigs. 1/4 cup of feta. 1 1/2 tablespoons of raw sesame seeds toasted in a dry pan until a shade or two darker. To make the lentils, you're going to put the lentils, garlic, sage, and olive oil into a small pot along with 2 cups of cold water and set it over medium heat. Let the water come to a simmer, not boiling, and then turn the heat to low and cook the lentils in a very gentle simmer just until they're tender. April recommends 25 minutes, but mine took 35 and needed a touch more water at the end. Take the pan off the heat and let the lentils cool a bit before draining them. Pick out and discard the sage and garlic. You'll have about 2 cups of cooked lentils. Make the dressing. You're going to mix together the ground coriander and cumin in a small bowl. Mash the garlic clove to a paste with 1 teaspoon of salt. Use 1/2 as much kosher salt and even less table salt on a cutting board or in a mortar. In a small bowl for your dressing, combine the mashed garlic, tahini, 3 tablespoons of the lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of the olive oil, 1 teaspoon of the ground coriander and cumin mixture, and 2 tablespoons of water. Stir well, then taste. Add more lemon if desired. Then assemble the salad. You're going to place the onion slices in a medium bowl and break them up with your fingers. Sprinkle in 2 good pinches of salt and then 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, 2 remaining teaspoons of olive oil, and the cilantro or parsley. Toss well and then crumble in the cheese and gently toss again. Toss the lentils with the drained chickpeas, preserved lemon rind if you're using, and 1 teaspoon of flaky sea salt in a large mixing bowl. Pour in the tahini dressing and toss it all together really well and then stir in the onion feta mixture. Arrange the salad in a bowl or a platter and sprinkle the mixture with the sesame seeds and some of the remaining spices. And serve, and do not forget to share. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff, read by Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.